shaking her fist, and an eagle will fly.
And welcome back to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB. I'm Don Beisel Jr., and I'm joined in studio with my guest, Gary Haseley. Gary, we were talking last hour about a lot of the issues with this last election. But I want to jump ship a little bit before our guest does call in. I'm just texting him now. So one of the things I was actually talking to our Pennsylvania State Treasurer about last night, Stacey Garrity, is that right now we're stuck with mail-in ballots. I mean, you know, they're not going anywhere until we switch the governor's seat. I mean, that's just how it's going to be. I mean, I can't see Josh Shapiro signing any kind of legislation that's going to say, oh, we're going to eliminate mail-in ballots. So I have been talking since 2020, before the 2020 presidential election, that we need to, as a party, stop this. We're against mail-in ballots and instead embrace the attack that the Democrats take of putting these mail-in ballots in the hands of what are labeled their zeros, ones, and twos, the people that don't come out to vote. Because nothing was more evident than in the election of Tuesday, where Senator Mastriano won the day of election pretty handily. Yep. But, of course, we got our butts kicked in mail-in ballots. So when Stacey Garrity and I were talking last night, we both agree on this issue that we as a party have to stop this anti-mail-in ballot thing and start encouraging people that are, you know, zeros, ones, and twos and actively promote mail-in balloting for the people that don't normally vote. Or otherwise, we're never going to win another election. I mean, I can't see it. I can't see. There's not enough way to drive enough votes to either offset the number of mail-in ballots, which, by the way, and I think you and I both agree on this, mail-in ballots are the spot where most of the fraud is going to occur, or possibility of fraud. So how do we combat that? We have to combat that ourselves.
So a couple of thoughts. First of all, you know, I did some work with some folks on the data around voting to look at where people are voting from and who's voting. And we found some really strange things. We found people voting from non-residential addresses. Well, that's illegal. It's impossible.
Yes.
No one lives there.
Right.
Right. I was at a house where one woman lives there, five people voted there,
right,
one of whom was dead. That was in 2020. So there's no question that when you bring when a mail-in ballot comes into the system, no one knows who voted it.
I agree.
They know where it went out. I heard a story the other day. Somebody had three names, like something like Sue, Susie, and Susan, three ballots. You know, so these stories are everywhere. This is a system that is designed to allow fraud.
And not that I want to cut you off there, but your point is well made.
Yeah.
Because I got applications at my house for Donald Beisel, Donald William Beisel Jr., okay, because I'm a junior, Donald William Beisel without the junior, okay? So I got three applications for me.
Yep.
Okay.
And if you were in a different party, you might have gotten three ballots. We don't know, right? It's hard to say. So there's no question. I think the fundamental reason that the low-information voter is going Democrat is because, again, we allow the Democrat Party to shape the battlefield. We don't know what our offering is to the customer, to the voter. I don't know who in the Republican Party can actually, sort of anybody on the street who can actually say what it stands for. You mentioned earlier the standard answer, right, which is financial responsibility and limited government. When has the Republican Party ever done that?
Right.
So we have a problem in that we're not driving voters to the polls because we're not giving them something to vote for. Our greatest enemy is not mail-in ballots. It is the couch. It's just real comfortable to sit on that thing.
Yes.
And live, you know, binge watch Seinfeld. But that said, in this particular race, in this cycle, I work for some really smart, with this group of really smart people who proactively went out and tried to get to the folks who don't vote regularly, these infrequent voters who still are obviously still there. They voted recently, but they don't vote often. They're not big in the midterms. And to get them mail-in ballot applications. And there was a good response from that. And some of them did come back. and they registered, they asked for a ballot, they got the ballot, they voted the ballot. So there was an effort to do that in this cycle. Now, this, again, was a grassroots effort. It was done by, you know, just a group of really smart, motivated patriots. It wasn't done by, you know, in an effective way by other groups. Whereas on the Democrat side, there are unlimited numbers of people who are full-time paid staffers making significant amounts of money with large organizations who are doing all that. The Republican Party has no response. So I think you're right in that as long as this demon mail-in ballot is with us, we have to learn how to use it in a way that works. We don't want to move one in-person voter from in-person to the mail.
No.
That's a bad move.
Right.
But so we got to figure out how we're going to do this. But the real fundamental problem that that can't address is this party issue. What is the offering? What do we stand for? You know, is this just about people garnering power in some sort of a top-down organization? Or is this truly about serving the nation, serving a set of principles, and serving the voter?
Well, I'm going to bring Charlie Giroux in here on this conversation because, as I always like to joke to him about, he's one of the few people that have been around longer than me. My issue is that we have allowed, and this has happened over the years, it just didn't happen yesterday, we have allowed the Democratic Party to define who we are as a party. We, you know, and we've been complicit in that. Okay, we have didn't want to offend anybody. You know, like we were talking in the last hour. You know, pro-life used to be part of the Democratic platform. God forbid if you say that now. Okay, you're demonized. As Senator Mastriano wasn't. He never even talked about abortion, as we talked about. You know, or if you talk about, you know, like we were talking about education or energy policy, if you notice in that gubernatorial race, Josh Shapiro never talked once about one issue.
No.
It was all about emotion.
Yes.
It was all about emotion. And of course, what bothers me, as I said earlier in the last hour, was what bothers me is we had these Benedict Arnolds, and I'll call them that, in our own party. You know, the Jeff Bartoses, the Val DiGiorgios, having fundraisers for Josh Shapiro, the Jim Greenwoods, the in my county, David Heckler, who was a former Bucks County District Attorney. I'm sorry, you know. I mean, that to me is the most disgusting thing I've ever witnessed, that what they did here, okay? And so, Charlie, I want to bring you in here because, you know, And this is Charlie Giroux. Charlie was worked great in the Mastriano campaign, gave some of the best speeches I ever heard, got the crowds all riled up and stuff like that. But Charlie, you've been around a while, and so
longer than you, Don.
Yeah. So first of all, how did we get here? How did we get to this point where the party cannot coalesce behind a candidate that won the primary by over a 2-to-1 margin?
Well, you know, that's one of the great tragedies of this year, Don, and one of the things that really bothers me. And as you know, we're not telling your listeners anything they aren't already aware of. I ran in the primary. I didn't win. And, you know, it was not a tough call for me to reach out to Senator Mastriano and say, you know, I'm willing to help. Tell me what I can do. And you, Don, were the person that came to me and said, will you help? And I did. And Dave White did. But few others did. And to me, taking your ball and going home after you've lost is the most childish thing you can do. It's the most unproductive thing you can do. And at the very least, if you have to do that, keep your damn mouth shut. But these folks that were out there actively campaigning for Josh Shapiro nauseate me. Of course, many of them, if not most of them, Don, as you know, were people that also told us to vote for Joe Biden and to vote for Hillary Clinton. And you just got to wonder, you know, where their philosophy really brings them down. And you've got to, in my judgment, conclude that a lot of them aren't truly Republicans. But the party has really got to do now some soul searching, not finger pointing. That, you know, there's really not much room for that in my judgment. We've got to really ask ourselves, what is our message? Because you're correct. We allowed the Democrats to outfox us on messaging. Who are our best messengers? And I come back to the William F. Buckley thing of we've got to be nominating the conservative who is most electable. And third, and this is something that I think has really been a problem over the course of the past number of years, not just in this election, but going back some time, how are we going to equip and assist the faithful to do the blocking and tackling, the hard work in the trenches that makes the difference in close elections? You know, out on the streets, at the grassroots, going door to door, manning phone banks, doing all the old-fashioned things that both persuade people to be for your candidate and then help turn them out to vote on election day or through mail-in ballots.
Well, you know, Charlie, one of the things that frustrates me about this whole thing is Senator Mastriano and his team built such a gigantic grassroots organization that if they were, it would have been able to combine with the Republican establishment organization, it would have been an unstoppable force. You know, that we could have easily won this election. And instead of having this internal fight, as, you know, Lincoln said, a house divided by against itself will fall, I'm very few loss of words sometimes, but I'm at a loss of words on this because I'm disappointed, but I'm angry. I'm angry at the people that either did the bare minimum or, as we know, actively supported the Democratic candidate, and they got an R next to their name.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say, Don. It's tragic that people who have the R next to their name chose to support openly, in some cases, somebody who on every single issue should be anathema to them. It's just it's mind-boggling. But, you know, we can go through a lot of things that were done and weren't done during the course of this campaign. But as I say, I'm not sure that finger-pointing really helps at this point. I think that what is much more productive is for us to come up with a plan
yes.
that will allow us to win in 2024.
And that's the thing that I was, you know, you've been doing this a long time as well as I have. And whether you win or lose, you always do a little introspective view of what you did in the campaigns and so forth and where you made your mistakes and where you had your successes. And that's natural. I mean, you know, so I can look back and look at the mistakes that we made as a campaign. I pretty much know what they are, you know, and we talked about that a little bit in the last hour. But, you know, you learn from them and you go forward. You know, I just don't know how. I wish I had an answer to tell these people that didn't support Doug that we're not looking to disenfranchise them, you know, that we're not trying to make them extinct as far as being in the party, that the party would be stronger with them on board. And we want to get back, as Gary and I were talking about earlier, we want to get back to, like, you know, when Ronald Reagan said, you know, the 11th commandment, you know, and we need to get back to that. Or otherwise, I hate to say it, but we're not going to win another election.
No, and I mean, politics ultimately, Don, as you know, is about addition and multiplication, not subtraction and division. And in order for the Republicans to win in Pennsylvania, they've got to reach out to a significant number of independents and Democrats. We're behind by 500,000 votes still after all the positive shifts that have gone on over the course of the past number of years. We're still half a million voter registrations in short. Just to begin. So for any Republican running statewide in Pennsylvania, it's a tough hill to climb, and you've got to have everybody pulling on the same oar. You've got to have the best messengers. You've got to have a crystal clear message, and you've got to be able to execute your plan flawlessly and equipping the foot soldiers
right.
At the street level is so vitally important in that.
Well, and the silence of certain people within the party of allowing Josh Shapiro to get away with not debating Doug, you know, that they basically, when Doug would try to challenge Josh to a debate, there was no outcry from anybody, you know. Oh, you know, in other words, we were like one voice, you know, when there's so many more of us. And again, you know, they basically fulfilled their self-fulfilling prophecy. when they, you know, I've had people say this to me. Ah, see, I told you he was too extreme. He was too this. He was too that. I had somebody say to me, you guys never ran any TV commercials against Josh, you know, to counteract his commercials. And my response was, well, show me the copy of the check you wrote to donate to the campaign. And maybe we would have been able to write those, you know, to run those commercials. You know, everybody can talk. Okay. But, you know, it's you have to be, and I'm not talking about people that couldn't afford it. I'm talking about people that could. Okay. And yet, you know, they're silent. You know, they're silent with their checkbook. They're silent with their ability to come and speak. They're silent to call Josh Shapiro out for who he is and what he stands for. You know, and then, of course, when Doug loses, they can just turn around and say, see, we told you. And that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's no question about that.
Yeah, and it's disheartening.
From my perspective, I think you're both making great points. From my perspective, Mastriano was both not extreme and was eminently electable. When you allow the enemy to define you, as the Republican Party does and has happened in this race, when you allow the enemy to have 25 times the spending power to run that definition, and there's no response from the other side, when you don't have an effective communication strategy nationally, statewide, and in most cases locally, on social media, on regular media, corporate media, you know, when you don't have those things, when you don't have a platform that the average person walking the street can look at and say, hey, listen, I also want energy. I don't want to pay $5 for gas. And by the way, once this race is over and they turn off the spigot on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is now in a dangerously low number, I know gas prices are going up, because not only is that going to be 1 million barrels a day out of the market, but the Saudis just took 2 million out. Think of the discussions that were not had because the enemy decided what we were going to talk about, and the enemy decided Mastriano was an extremist. Meanwhile, but you go back to the positions that Shapiro embraces, they would be unelectable just a few years ago. So I think all of the things you're saying are correct. Getting the people that are the volunteers, you know, the question for those volunteers is, how do we support you and what are we giving you to go fight with? The message for the candidates, how do we support you? What are we giving you to go fight with? The message for the voters, what are we offering you to entice you to get off that couch and go to a polling place, or not quite as good, fill out one of these mail-in ballots and send it in and hope it gets there and gets counted. What we're talking about here, I think, is more than just the traditional post-election, you know, internal introspection and then plan. No, I think what we're looking at here is a fundamental restructuring process. I think it's national, I think it's state, and I think it's in most cases local, where we have to come back and answer the questions, why does this party exist and who does it exist for? And last point, this party will never win again if it doesn't have the support of the patriot community. This grassroots machine is the most passionate. It's the most numerous. These people are putting their own personal time and sweat and, in many cases, money into these campaigns and into this movement to try to turn the nation around. If the establishment people, what I call the Republicrats, because there seems to be little daylight between them and the Democrats that they just supported, the Republicrats think that somehow they can burn this thing down and rule over those ashes, and then somehow that's going to be relevant. It'll be like Oregon. It'll be like Colorado. It'll be like Washington. They will never win again. If they don't find a way to bring those to work with the patriot community, they're going to fail. Now, on the other hand, the patriots I've seen reach out over and over and over again to the establishment. And to your point earlier, Don, sometimes the establishment say, oh, we're with you. We're behind you. But in fact, behind the scenes, nothing's happening. This has to end. So I don't know if the party at any of these levels is capable of the kind of real hard work that we're talking about or not, but it's this is more than just finger pointing. It's more than just laying out a plan. This is to turn this around is a complete strategic evaluation.
And to the point, and Charlie, I know you weren't on the last hour, but I want to say this again because people need to realize this. We as a campaign reached out to a lot of these candidates and said to them, give us your materials, because as you know, we had a gigantic grassroots operation for the Mastriano campaign, door knocking and so forth. And so we reached out to a lot of local candidates and said, hey, if you give us your stuff, we'll put it in our bags. Mm-hmm. And there's one young man I'm speaking about specifically in Middletown Township where I live, who I was at the Middletown Township Republican Committee meeting 1 month, and I said to him, give me your stuff. We'll make sure it goes out with our stuff. Now, I had known that the HRCC had said to all the candidates, our polling says don't mention Mastriano, don't put his stuff in your bags. Okay, I knew that, but I still reached out to him because it's where I live, and I wanted him to win. And, of course, I never got the stuff, and now he's going to probably lose his race by 2 votes. Two.
Wow.
Two. Okay? And we're going to lose the Pennsylvania State House over this. And there was other candidates as well who I offered for us to put the stuff out in our bags. I didn't care if they didn't want to put our stuff in their bags, but we were offering to put their stuff in our bags. And we got no response. And we had an organization second to none as far as door knocking and so forth and so on. And now, you know, Joe is probably going to lose his race. He's replacing Frank Ferry. He's going to lose it. He's down by 2 votes. Okay, I don't know where it's going to shake out, but
right.
You know, but the point is, it didn't have to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Charlie, you've been around enough to know that if somebody is willing to help you, you know, then take it.
Absolutely. There's too many that aren't willing to. That if you look gift horses in the mouth, you're going to have a big problem.
Well, you're a Bucks County guy. You were here. You know how it works, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, people here, you know, they respond to door knocking. They respond to the face-to-face contact. You know, and look, I think Joe is a great guy, okay? But, you know, he's new, and so he was taking the advice of people that were probably telling him, oh, you know, the HRCC says, you know, don't mention Mastriano because it's bad for you. And now he's going to lose by 2 votes.
Tragic.
Yes.
You know, in the primary and then the run-up to the general, we this group of grassroots folks that I work, these patriots, these who are amazing people. They're brilliant. They're hardworking. They're incredible. And so we've had a series of events, and our strategy was to hold events and go throughout the county where people don't typically get to see candidates and hold the kind of events that we do where people show up, which includes experts on policy issues or maybe, some candidates talk. We did a really good one on Mother's Day leading into the primary. We had 3 congressional candidates there. We had a state rep candidate there. We had a lieutenant governor candidate there. And then we had experts in between talking about substantive issues. So, you know, these are robust events. We did one after the primary, and then we abandoned that strategy because we were unable to identify what the platform was for some of the candidates, and it was really hard to work with the candidates to get going. So we shifted our attentions and said, listen, we're just going to work with this Mastriano campaign because it's clear to us what they stand for. And I'll tell you, Don, I mean, I know you had a big role in this campaign and you had a lot of responsibility. I'm sure there's lots of criticisms to go around. I'm not sure what they are. I can tell you this. The things that we wanted to get done, we wanted to have rallies. You guys did rallies. Some of them we helped you with, right? But you had rallies. We wanted to see a platform that made sense. The plan was excellent. I saw a group of people in this campaign that were hardworking, smart people who worked tirelessly. And I don't have any criticisms for this campaign. I think they did a fabulous job. If we had the Republican machine behind them the way the Democrats have, now we don't have, the Republicans don't have the machine the Democrats have.
Right.
But if we had that behind the Mastriano campaign, this entire story changes.
Well, yeah, and I will, you know, again, I'm not saying this just because Charlie's on the phone, but Charlie was one of the first guys to step up and say, hey, whatever you need me to do, I'll do. I drove out, met him in his office in Harrisburg, and we talked. And I no secret here. I said to him, I said, you know, I'd like to have another adult in the room with me because, you know, because,
I think you said old geezer, but
yeah.
That's
well, the point is, you know, when you have a grassroots campaign, you have a lot of people that, you know, are first timers, never worked a campaign before. And there's certain intricacies involved and certain things you want to do. And, you know, you got to stroke some egos here and there, you know, but you still want to stay true to what you believe in, too. And I think that was, you know, and Charlie knew Reagan personally, but I believe that was one of Ronald Reagan's greatest strengths, that he was able to stay true to his fundamental beliefs, but still find a way to compromise. I mean, Charlie, I mean, you, if you want to jump in on that, you know.
No, that was one of the big keys to his success. And he always did things with a smile on his face. And that, you know, is something that I think, unfortunately, is lost on a lot of folks.
So, you know, Charlie, I mean, I'm sure you have some thoughts on this. You know, if you were could wave the magic wand and fix it all for the Republican Party, you know, what would be the steps? I mean, you know, and I'm going to defer to you on this because I have my ideas, but I know that you have some thoughts on this, and I'd really, you know, I respect your opinions, and I really want to hear what you have to say about this.
Well, I think, you know, the party has to rebuild itself. I mean, the party didn't have any money to support the Mastriano or the Oz campaigns this cycle, and that hurt. There's no question about it. I mean, I don't know what Senator Mastriano ended up spending, but it was somewhere, I think, if I'm not wrong, Don, around $4 million.
Right.
I mean, there are people running for the state senate that are spending more than that. And when you're out spent, you know, 10 to 1, it's going to be very much an uphill fight. If you remember 4 years ago, Scott Wagner spent, I don't know, somewhere around $35 million, and he lost by more votes, both percentage-wise and in hard votes, than Doug Mastriano did.
Right.
But I think the party's got to do a couple of things as a party, and it really just goes back to the old-fashioned building blocks of any organization, having enough money to support candidates and to get the message out, but you've got to have the right message, and that is not a structural thing, but, you know, is definitely a part of any plan. And then we've got to equip the committee people. I mean, to be very candid, a lot of committee people simply aren't doing their jobs. And we've got to incorporate what your other guest said a little while ago, these patriots who are out there very enthused, very, very motivated. But as you know, Don, you were at a couple of events where I asked people in the audience, how many of you have gone door to door for Doug Mastriano? And among his hardcore supporters, very, very few hands went up. And how many of you have made phone calls? You know, not that many. And so, you know, going to rallies and being all pumped up and enthused is only half the battle. You've got to go out and do the hard work. And to be very candid, I just don't think a lot of folks know how to do it. So
right.
You've got to have somebody to train them, somebody to show them the way and equip them with, you know, the apps and whatnot that are used in place of street lists today so that they can go out and do meaningful work.
Right. Well, and one of the things that I had actually started here in the Southeast for the campaign is I held training sessions for these people. And, you know, it was great to see people, you know, said, oh, I never knocked a door before, you know, and they would come to the
right.
training session and I would teach them how to do it. And then when they would come to the next one and you could tell by the app, like how many doors they knocked on. And, you see, so there are... You're right. There are certain people that are willing to do it, but we need to have an apparatus in place to teach them how to do it and to
absolutely.
Get and to give them yep. the support, you know, to do it. You know, you just can't say, okay, go knock on a door, and they've never done it before. You
and
know,
that unfortunately, I think was a lot of what was happening. And,
yeah.
You know, hats off to you, Don. If we had 20 more Don Beischels in the campaign, things might have been different. I mean that sincerely. I mean it's. You've got to train and equip people. And, you know, being enthusiastic is great, but, you know, knowing what to do and then being able to go out and do it effectively is better.
And if I tell people so that, you know, one of the things I would always say to people in the campaign, you know, I started out in this business, you know, as a young 21-year-old knocking doors for Ronald Reagan. And, you know, they just gave you the street list and out the door you went, you know, again, no training or whatever, but I was motivated, you know, and so for me, I understood where these people were coming from when they were scared, you know, and I love to tell this story. I was at one training session that I was doing. I think I want to say it was in Lancaster County, but it could have been Lebanon. I can't remember where, but anyway, this woman was 81 years old, and she said to me, I've never done anything for a campaign, but I'm willing to go knock on doors for Doug, and that's why I'm here, so you can teach me how to do it.
God bless her.
And then the next time we had it, she came and she said, "Do you see how many doors I knocked? I've knocked on over 500 doors, you know?" And, you know, but that was, you know, again, I think, like, to your point, that we have to get out of this, what I call this country club thinking. And we have to start, as a party, embracing the people that are willing to do the grunt work. That the you know, for too long, and I've this has happened to me in Bucks County, so I'm just going to lay it out, that the patriots, the conservatives, are looked down on by their establishments of Republicans. They're as troublemakers, you know. Oh, how many? I can't tell you how many times I've heard the, well, you've got to pay your dues, or you got to wait your turn, you know. Oh, what do you mean you want to run for office? You want to run for committee? It's not, is somebody else is in line for that. Well, I'm sorry. Last time I checked, the United States Constitution says every citizen is allowed to run for office if they want. Okay. So this whole hierarchy, there was a time when the Republican Party was the people's party. And I think we got to get back to that.
You're talking about a shift from a command and control model to a service model.
Right.
You have to serve those volunteers that are going to knock doors. You have to serve those candidates. You have to serve those precinct committee people, and then they will serve you.
Right. I mean, you've seen this, Charlie, from, you know, many times, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a matter of getting the family together, and I mean that in every sense of the word, and having a discussion about how we play nice together, because for every person that says, you know, who the hell do you think you are, you know, coming in here, and, you know, you have people that have not been involved previously who come in and you're all just a bunch of rhinos. You're not real Republicans.
Right.
And people call me a rhino. I said, you know, when you've got the scars that I have.
Trust me, standing
up for conservative values, you know, it's pretty tough to make the case that I'm a rhino. And well, you know, with the one event. Where somebody stood up and said, Mike Pence is evil.
Right.
I was like, wait a minute. You know, I mean, he's one of the most devout Christians I've ever known. You may not like what he did on one particular day, but that doesn't make him evil.
So I think
we've got to get back to Ronald Reagan's old thing that, you know, somebody that's with you 80% of the time is not your enemy.
Well, the funny thing is you said that, and you'll get a kick out of this. I've been called a rhino.
We'll have a rhinos club,
I guess, you know. And again, it's because I go by that philosophy too. I mean, look, I may not agree with you 100% of the time, but if I can get 80% or 70%, you know, it's better than a 0%. Okay.
Absolutely.
And then maybe I support your opponent in the primary. If I don't like you, if I want to get that other 20% or that other 30%, then I work against you in the primary. But then when it's over, if I don't win, then I come and I support you. And that, look, I this is what I say all the time. It's like you're at your family dinner at Thanksgiving and the family has an argument. And by the time the dinner is over, everybody's sitting around having coffee and pie, okay, because the argument's over, okay? And that's what we have to get back to.
Absolutely, Don.
To quote
Lyndon Johnson, it's always better to have him on the inside pissing out than on the outside pissing out.
and that's an excellent, excellent point because, you know, I sit there and I say to people all the time, I said, look, I said, You may think I'm brash, you might think I'm outspoken, you might think whatever you think, okay? Everybody's entitled to their opinion. That's why they make chocolate and vanilla ice cream. That's what I always say to people. I said, but at the end of the day, it still all tastes good if we can just sit down and enjoy it.
Well said, Don.
You know, so we have to find a way to, I think I can say this on the air, to stop having a pissing contest. You know.
Well, I just used the word a minute ago, so if you're in trouble, so am I.
You know, I hope we can do this. I mean, because if we don't, we're doomed. You know, if we keep this internal fighting going on within the party, we're doomed. I was having a conversation last night. I was telling Gary this. So I was talking to Stacey Garrity last night. And Stacey's under the same thought that I am, is that we have to stop this fighting against mail-in ballots while they're still here. Because if we don't start embracing mail-in ballots, then A, we're never going to get rid of them because we're never going to get a governor in place that's going to sign to get rid of them. But B, we're not going to ever win another election. I mean, Doug and Dr. Oz both won the day of election. We drove out the vote. But we got our butts kicked with mail-in ballots. And so even though philosophically, you know, I know you don't, I don't, Gary doesn't, none of us believe in mail-in ballots, but they're here. And so to try, this would be like me when I was building houses, trying to build a house, and if my nail gun broke and my hammer was sitting in the toolbox, I would say, too bad, I can't keep going because I don't want to use that hammer. Yeah, it makes no sense to me.
No, I agree with you, Don. I mean, I have real, real serious problems with mailing ballots, but they're the law. And
right.
Until we can change the law, you've got to play within the rules. And that's a rule that, you know, the Democrats take full advantage of, and we don't.
Exactly right.
Well, and
go ahead.
Yeah, the question then becomes, who are you targeting? How are you going to try to get them to vote, and what are they going to vote for?
Right.
Right. You still have to motivate them to get that ballot and then vote it the way you want. And if, again, you don't go after the regular voters who are actively, productively engaged in the process,
right.
You go after folks who are infrequent voters who just simply don't care enough to get off the couch and go to the polling place. There is a place to use that. But as we've said before, as long as we continue to shift this election system to the election system that Jimmy Carter and James Baker said in 2005, you cannot do this or you will have corruption, right? France just banned all
really,
this
really
stuff.
Really, really important point. You know, yeah, it was the Carter Commission that told us that mail-in voting is rife with opportunities for fraud. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to put an exclamation point on what you just said.
That was a Democrat that came up with that.
Well, it was Democrat and Republican. Yeah, it was and now France is following their guidance, and we are doing the opposite.
Right.
So I don't disagree entirely that as long as this sort of electoral demon is on us, this mail-in ballot fraught with peril, as long as we have to deal with it, getting that infrequent voter to come in. But even that approach will not work if we don't give them something to vote for.
Yes.
Doug did that. Other candidates didn't. Everybody lost. The people running as soft Democrats lost. The people running as identity politics candidates lost. And the candidates running as patriots lost or issues-driven candidates. We never in Pennsylvania got the discussion shifted away from abortion, you know, in the common discussion, away from abortion to inflation, crime, to all the other issues that we're facing now, the $32 trillion of debt, out-of-control government. You know, there were an unending list of policy issues and popular culture issues and issues affecting the kitchen table that the party could have grabbed a hold of and used to shift this election. They never effectively did that.
And Charlie, one of the things that bothered me was that one of the biggest spenders in the primary, Commonwealth Partners, who was throwing money hand over fist at Bill McSwain, they never jumped into this. You know, they did a little bit, but not nowhere near the amount of money that they spent in the primary.
No.
And
please don't ask me to defend the Commonwealth Party.
No, I'm not. But I'm just saying, you know, for somebody that tries to portray themselves as a conservative organization, probably one of the most conservative candidates that we've had as our standard bearer to run for governor in the state got little or no support from them. I was trying to be nice, but you know, okay, yeah. I'll just say no support. But the funny thing is, they supported Carrie Del Rosso in the primary, and yet
They left her by the wayside in the general.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, I guess when you boil it all down, they allowed their own self-interests, you know, all these groups and these former office holders, air quotes, Republicans, they allowed their own self-interests to overrule what was best for the people of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, as I said, you know, early in your show, Don, taking your ball and going home is never going to be a good strategy, and that's what they did.
You know, I can give you another example that's kind of interesting. In Northeast Ohio, there's a three-county area that had not voted for a Republican presidential candidate until 2016. Thousands of people left the Democrat Party, joined the Republican Party, and elected Donald Trump. He won that market. He won it again in 2020. I was in an event over there listening to some of the folks there talking, and you know, they got candidates that come up who are really clear, aggressive, non-apologetic. They are laying it right out exactly as they are. The crowds respond incredibly well. They had a great day, a really great day on Tuesday. They're conservative candidates, they're patriot candidates. They won. They won in a market that until 2016 hadn't elected a Republican in anyone's lifetime. So there is a way to do this. There is a way to reinvigorate the party. You know, well, frankly, 10 years ago in that valley, you couldn't get 10 Republicans to meet under a shade tree because there weren't 10, right? You can now fill rooms with people. They come out, they knock doors, they do poll watching, poll working, do all the stuff that's necessary, and they have completely shifted that market. Now, that was Tim Ryan's home market. Tim Ryan, who's never had a job as an adult outside of Congress, not one. He's only worked in Congress, first as an aide, then as a congressman. He now runs for the Senate and loses his home market. He lost those three counties. It's shocking that that could happen. I know the Democrats were stunned, but the reality is that's happened because of the way that whole place has been reinvigorated. They now have a reason to vote for these Republicans, and they now understand, I think, more clearly why that Democrat package that Tim Ryan supported for 20 years was destructive to his constituents. And it was. It was good for China. It was really good for the, you know, money spenders at the UN. It was good for all these folks that blow cash. It was good for the bloated government and to run up the $32 trillion of debt. He didn't do anything to help the people in that community who needed what Trump gave them.
Right.
The first benefit they saw from a politician was 2017 to 2019, just before the pandemic hit. So this has been done. It's been done in a market with demographics not dissimilar from what we have in Pennsylvania. And it's been done recently. And again, they had a great day Tuesday. They're over there. They're having brandies in the boardroom over there. So it's possible.
So Charlie, I want to just switch gears a tiny bit, because one of my pet peeves has been that as Republicans, we completely ignore Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we have races where we let Democrats just run unopposed. And I understand the funding issues and all that stuff like that. But I think, and, you know, if you don't agree with me, just tell me. But I think that we need to make a concentrated effort that every race should be contested, whether or not the person's going to get their butt kicked 98-2. Okay. But we have to start having candidates running against Democrats, no matter what the demographics are.
I couldn't agree more, Don. I think that if you get candidates on the ballot who are willing to take one for the team and, you know, understand that going in, they'll have tremendous positive effect, because instead of having neighborhoods that give virtually 100% of the vote to the Democrats, no, maybe it's 80%. Well, that is a game changer.
And if you're, I've always said, if you're only hearing one voice, you're only going to vote one way.
That's absolutely true. And look what's happening where folks really are challenged. The Latino community is incredibly moving and shifting towards the Republican side. In state after state, locality after locality, the fastest growing demographic group in our country, the Hispanics and Latinos, are increasingly Republican. Look what's happening in the African American community. A voting block, if you will, that Democrats took for granted for many, many years is now more slowly than the Hispanics, but still nonetheless shifting towards Republicanism.
Well,
another key fact for Tuesday night. In the exit polls, among the people whose income would qualify them as super wealthy, they voted overwhelmingly Democrat. Among the people whose income would qualify them as upper middle class, in other words, very comfortable, and some would call it wealthy, they voted Democrat. You had to come down to where people's income would be categorized as middle class, lower middle income, and even poor to get to the Republican core. That's a seismic shift in the body politic. One, I think, Don, is a really, really good thing. The Republican Party is now the people's party. It is now a party of working families rather than a bunch of country club elites.
And you know what? I agree with you, Charlie. Now, the question is, will the party leaders pay attention to that demographic? In other words, I can tell you firsthand, we got openly criticized for going to Fifth and Erie and having an event at a Latino club in Doug's campaign. We got openly criticized by our own party for going there. And I said to myself, why? That's the demographic that is going to be the future of the Republican Party.
No question about it. I don't know who criticized you, but
I'm not going to mention names, but they did.
Well, I think what Charlie just said is really on point. And I had a discussion just by happenstance with somebody who was a Somali Muslim, immigrated here 16 years ago. The first point he wanted to make sure that I knew was that Ilhan Omar does not represent them, that he does not agree with this, and that he's very concerned about what he sees going on in our country. Oddly enough, I just happened to have a discussion with a Muslim who immigrated here in 2015 from Egypt about a week later. And once he realized he could openly talk to me, because, you know, they don't want to say anything and get an offended Democrat. Once he realized he could talk to me, this guy was screaming at me for about 45 minutes about how upset he is at what they're doing to his daughter in their schools, what they're being taught or rather not taught, what they're being indoctrinated into, and that the gender stuff has this guy beside himself. I don't know how the party or the candidates or the machine collectively, whatever this thing is, goes out and connects with those people, but they are natural Republicans if you accept as the Republican purpose and platform this sort of American agenda, right? The Constitution, the rule of law, we're going to protect our children, parents' rights, these compelling issues that can bring all those people in. Of course, the Latino community, you know, if you talk to Cubans that have immigrated here, if you talk to people from Vietnam, the people that came from China that did not come sponsored by the party, the Chinese Communist Party, you know, they are some of our most ardent supporters. You know, I had a discussion with a guy from Venezuela who starts explaining to me how, and this is a guy that was a recent immigrant, and he said, you know, this can't happen here. What happened over there in Venezuela can't happen here, because he starts talking about the checks and balances and the division of the branches of government. It was fascinating. A conversation that's maybe harder to have with some kids in the suburbs.
Right.
So there's no question there's a giant demographic out there that's looking to be connected with, and if that secret can be uncovered, if that can be done, and what you did in Philadelphia to go connect with that community was brilliant.
Well, so and one of the things that my good friend Calvin Tucker and I have been working on for the past 3 years, 4 years, is connecting with these different communities in the city of Philadelphia. We had when they were running for office at Pastor Todd Johnson's church around, I want to say his church is around 23rd and Ridge. I know you're familiar with what that neighborhood is, Charlie.
Yep.
But at that church, we had Heather Heidelbaugh, Stacey Garrity, and Tim DeFore come there to speak to some of the people in the church. And then Stacey Garrity and others said, she goes, after I win, I will come back. And sure enough, after Stacey won, we did a unclaimed property thing at that church. Stacey came back with her team, and we gave back to the community over $20,000 of unclaimed property to that community. And I spoke to Stacey at the last event she was at with Doug, and she said, we got to go back to Todd's church. And I said, well, I'll set it up after the election. I said, I'm a little busy right now. You know, this was at Monday at one of the events we were at for Doug. I said, I got an election tomorrow. I said, but we'll talk about this afterwards. But my point is that if we're going to win these communities, then we have to have a presence in these communities. One of the things that Calvin did was we actually got an office in Germantown opened up for the RNC in Germantown. But we need more than one office in Philadelphia, okay?
Right.
And we need to reach out to the Latino community and the African American community and the Chinese community and the Korean communities the Pakistani communities, the Indian communities, because at their core, they're conservative.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But they only vote Democrat because that's the only voice they hear.
Right.
And so, you know, part of my mission, along with Calvin and some other people, Pastor Johnson and stuff, is I'm going to continue to go in there. Stacy's going to work. She said she'll go back anytime. We're going to go back again, and we're going to go to other areas. We're going to go back to that Latino club that we went to, because I asked her, would you do one there? She said, absolutely. And I don't care who criticizes us, because in the end, I want, you know, people misinterpret me sometimes. I want to win just as bad as the next guy, okay? But I'm not picking my candidate based on some obscure electability word, okay? You can be electable and still be a conservative.
Yes.
Okay, and that's, you know, one is not, you know, separate from the other, okay? Because if you explain conservative values and principles to communities that believe in those same principles, now you're making progress.
But you have to be sincere,
yes.
And then you have to deliver. So when she went back and did that community or that property recovery event, whatever that is, you know, that's both good government, and of course good government is good politics.
Yes.
So you got to mean it. You got to believe in what you're selling. You know, it's. I always keep coming back to this like a corporate thing. You're looking at this Philadelphia market. It is ripe for penetration by people that have the right product to go into that market.
Right.
And the package of principles that we're supposed to believe are part of the Republican package, those are the principles those people will embrace. Now you've got to go into the market and sell the product. But you got to mean it, and it's got to be a product you're going to stand behind.
Well, and so for Charlie, for you, I mean, obviously, you know, and it's funny, a lot of people don't realize this, but you're part of that Latino community.
I am.
And so obviously you understand what I'm saying here is that these, not only Latino community, but any of the minority communities, they respect commitment.
Absolutely.
And the thing
that they respect on is what you're suggesting, which is reaching out to them.
Yeah.
We have failed to do that. And the fact that you went to that center, I just still can't believe that you were criticized for doing it. But, I mean, that's precisely what we need to be doing, because for too long we have ignored people who are our natural allies and have allowed the Democrats to go in, wrap their arm around them and convince them that they somehow have the magic ticket for them, whereas in point of fact they're being fed a lie. And, you know, once folks understand, and it doesn't take them long to figure it out, where the things really lie, they're naturally with us. But again, we've got to reach out to them. We can't be saying, screw you, and then 3 weeks later say, but would you vote for our candidates?
You know what, Charlie? It can't just be you show up when there's an election.
Absolutely not. That's the point.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't ignore people and then say, oh, gee, would you like to vote for our candidates?
Right. If you go there and ask them for their vote, well, then the next logical step is you create a presence in the neighborhood, and you open up a regional office, or you open up an outreach center, or you do something where people can come to and, you know, hey, the Republican Party opened up an office at 23rd and Ridge. You know, how about that? Okay. Or at 5th and Erie, you know. I mean, again... Okay, you know, you have to, at some point, stop this just showing up when it gets around to election time, because that, to me, is disrespectful.
I agree.
And, you know, I just don't see how you go forward unless you make a presence and stay there.
Well, I just want to say thanks to you, gentlemen, for letting me join your conversation. This has been a great time.
Yep.
Been great to be with both of you.
Charlie, obviously, you know, we can continue to talk and you know, since I believe we both believe in the same goals, maybe we can do something together to keep pushing this thing forward.
I would like that very much, Don, and I salute you for what you did. You were indefatigable. Frankly, the Mastriano campaign would never have gotten to where it did if it weren't for you.
Well, I don't know about that, but
I do.
There was a lot of great, look. I say this in all honesty. I had a great team. My county coordinators. Since it's my show, I'll mention them. Jessica Steiner in Chester County, Karen Elliott in Delaware County, Barry Casper in Montgomery County, Mina Quarles in Philadelphia, Rachel Moyer in Lebanon, Amanda Sell, who is my second in command from Lancaster County, Rachel Moyer in Lebanon, Jeff Kriebel in Northampton, Rachel Vermillion in Lehigh, Valerie Boland in Dauphin, Dodie Federoff in Schuylkill, Sean Readers in Perry. Hopefully I didn't forget anybody because then they'll shoot me.
Let me help you out. Barry Casper is Bucks County.
Yes.
And you skipped over Montgomery.
Kurt Stein in Montgomery County.
There you go.
Yeah. And so all these people, they were fantastic. And we had some county chairs that were very helpful. Rafi Tarazan in Chester, Liz Havey in Montgomery County, Clay Breeze in Berks County, just in some of my counties, Jimmy Zumba up in Allentown for the RNC. Vince in Philadelphia. Vince did a great job in the last two events we had in Philadelphia to get people out there. There were people that stepped up, and I want to thank them. Pat Poprick wrote a nice check for Doug in Bucks County. So again, it's not everybody, and I want people to understand that when I get critical, I get my Irish up for my mom's side. I can come across as a little gruff. So, I think we can do this. So I want to thank you guys, Gary and Charlie, and we'll do this again soon. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.